You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? It's, I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
I think what you're trying to ask is, why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. It's I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I said this before in the same interview, I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Autumn Williams, and welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of intelligent radio as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Good morning, Autumn. Thank you. One of our Queens of Intellect members holding me down this morning on somewhat short notice, but I know you got me, Queen. We appreciate you. If you will, for being here with me this morning. And if you will, say hello to the intellectual outcast, as we now call our listeners. And if you will, just share a little bit about yourself, and we're going to jump into this morning's discussion and make the most of it. If you will, again, say hello to everyone and tell them who you are, Queen.
All right. Good morning, intellectual outcast. Yeah, I realized that was new. I had never heard you say that before, but I like it. I like being an outcast. But hey, everyone, again, Autumn here. Lord, techie, mom, Arthur, soon to be, new girlfriend, I guess I can say, to somebody. And all these other hats that I have going on. So I'm excited to be here. We're going to be talking about some interesting things. So, yeah, I'm ready to get started.
Now, absolutely glad to have you on with me again this morning, Queen. And so if you are a first-time listener, again, I go by the name Black Socrates, and we always attempt to take, if you will, the Socratic approach to any of the subject matters, typically on race, sex, and culture. Again, I say we are the best in the world at having these conversations, or as I said in the intro, push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in that mainstream media. This question this morning, I think, has been touched quite often. I actually follow this particular group, Hip Hop School, Past and Present, and they had an interesting dialogue, actually kicked off by one of my former Queens of Intellect members, De'Asia Robinson. And so this morning's discussion question is, hip-hop, self-destruction, or government control? Hip-hop, self-destruction, or government control? And so what I'll be doing, Autumn, is actually sharing a lot of De'Asia's thoughts. She's not able to be with us this morning. I was hoping to pull her in. Again, she used to hold me down for a number of years, but she's moved on to some other things in addition to doing a couple of podcasts. So she's definitely been a very important, if you will, asset to this show. And so we're going to kind of bring her spirit into this morning's discussion question, if you will, by sharing a lot of her thoughts throughout the show. But with that said, the way I always like to start the show, and again, you kind of got put in on notice, so I don't know if you even had a chance to have a first thought, if you will, when you hear the question, hip-hop, self-destruction, or government control. When you hear the question worded that way, what pops into your mind as your initial thought? We'll get into some deeper thoughts after we go to a break. Go ahead, Queen.
Oh, my gosh. First thought, oh, Lord, this is tough for me. I want to say government control. I believe that, you know, as a society, hip-hop is one of the most, if not the most influential genre of music. And just like anything else that is, you know, influential and dominant in that industry, the government finds its way to get its hands on it and use it as a means of control or a weapon of mass destruction, if you will. So I definitely think that in that sense, it is a tool of government control.
Hey, fair enough. I'll, you know, no surprise to you. You've been on the show several times. I'll be your antithesis, if you will. I think it is more consumer control, and some aspects of it can be self-destruction. I grew up per hip-hop head. I always tell people I'm the exact same age as hip-hop, which hip-hop turns 49, if you will, and or just maybe just turned 50. So, but either way, I'm the same age, and I am a diehard hip-hop head and recall it being, if you will, having positive influence in my life. However, if I'm honest, it definitely has its self-destructive attitudes as well. And so we'll get into, again, how I see things and, you know, to a degree how you see things. But more so, again, I'll be sharing these thoughts as they kind of went back and forth within, again, highlighting the hip-hop school past and present. For those who are listening that were looking to hear our special guest just to highlight this, Brother Supreme Ra had another obligation earlier this morning. And so he won't be our guest. We definitely hate to have him, as he would have definitely brought his insight. I would definitely consider that brother a hip-hop head like myself, as he is one of the founders of that particular. And actually, the cool thing about that podcast, it actually started out really as a group, and they've now turned that group into a thriving podcast, which, again, I will be sharing mostly DeAsia's thoughts, but even some of Supreme's thoughts as well. Hopefully some of you that were looking to hear some of Supreme Ra's insight, hopefully y'all are listening and y'all can call in and give us your 3 cents on how you see it. But within that group, they had a lively discussion where people were kind of on both sides of it. And the goal was to, if you will, bring some people out of that group to be a part of this discussion. However, I didn't want it. I thought it was something that should be, in a sense, brought to our platform, and it's not the first time that we've revisited hip-hop and talked about it in various ways, but you know, we love to go deeper, and they went deep on that show, and so I wanted to have our audience get an opportunity to kind of chime in and give their thoughts. So definitely appreciate your perspective. I would actually say, Autumn, that the majority of people who care about hip-hop probably would agree with you in the sense of your first thought being government controlled, if you will. I did see some responses via Facebook when we were promoting, and definitely some of the people that I admire and love in various industries, they were definitely chiming in, and I think more people were leaning towards your first thought. But either way, you know, we welcome the opinion. We welcome the disagreement. You know, we don't necessarily and people love to say agree to disagree. We won't be doing that on this show, because I always tell people that's just a way to shut the conversation down. We will push through and figure out the nuance of where we agree and where we disagree. And again, it's not necessarily about who's right or wrong as much as it is about learning from each other's perspective. So now that I've laid a good foundation for what we're doing this morning, we're going to go ahead and go to a short break. And if you will, Autumn, make sure you're paying attention to the cut. And we'll just start responding to the cuts and the different comments, again, from DeAsia as well as Supreme Ra from the Hip Hop School past and present. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers. Why you ask?
Man, you got to try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wines. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping deal or something. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Try the sweet red first.
Okay, that's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's kind of sweet, like I like it. You know what I'm talking about?
For sure. That's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Dipping Deal. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay. Now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on too.
Oh yeah? Okay, you said what? Sipandsharewines.com? Is that it?
Yep.
Bad.
It's just that my thing is I never blame the artists because right now they're treated as cattle, like mindless children anyway. With they have no developmental skills because nobody's saying once you have the contract, we can't school you on life management. You give a fool $1 million, what do you got? A fool with $1 million. But you got these cats out here, executives, once they sign them, they know they could get paid more. They could go to fucking Bel Air or their little fucking penthouse. It ain't got nothing to do with say, yo, that young cat we signed is wild, son. Yo, he's wild. You signed that motherfucker, didn't you? So my bottom line, right, and like I said, you know, a lot of people are asking me, let me not take much of your time, because I'm going to be here 48 hours like the movie. You know, Russell asked me, I said, you know, this is something that's about all of us because, look, many of y'all are getting like 35. I've been seeing y'all since, some of y'all since you're 22, now you're 36, and you're getting older, and now there's some concern. I said, the bottom line. The bottom line, black people across the country, some of y'all might not know this, but life to them is images and perception. Black folks, if you don't put it on BET, WB, UPN, or Hot 97, or maybe a little bit BLS and KISS, shit, you can say, look, we bomb in New York Thursday. Cats be like, yo, what's up Friday? Y'all, you know, really, I'm going to tell you this point. That, look, first of all, intelligence will save your ass anyway. Me and Dr. West have spoken, you know, he's allowed me to come to Harvard. I've been speaking on this subject for 14 years at a collegiate level to look at 350 white kids taking notes while black kids might want to go to that frat party. But understand this. Images control perception. Young people, perception is everything. You have to study Nazi propaganda to understand what's going on with the transmission of media images. Absolutely. You have to know the fact of advertising and subliminal seduction. It ain't nothing new. You have to understand there's a guy called Noam Chomsky that influenced me to make Don't Believe the Hype. You got to understand when they have a revolution in the country everywhere around the world, what's the first place they fucking attack? They take over the television station and the radio station. If look, it's called a coup. They start there. Look, if Hot 97 was to die tomorrow, some crackers that call themselves the home of hip-hop, wasn't even at KRS-One Hip-Hop Appreciation Week. But yeah, it was the home of hip-hop. Who says? Because you motherfuckers financed that shit.
Welcome back to the Mr. Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Autumn Williams. This morning's discussion question, hip-hop, self-destruction, or government control, as we hear none other than Chuck D out of Public Enemy actually talking. Well, this is actually a cut many have probably heard on C-SPAN, and he definitely gives his perspective in reference to if you will, being an elder of hip-hop, I'll call him that, if you will, giving his perspective on, in a sense, what happens within hip-hop. And to a degree, I think he leans into some of, if you will, some of what you were just mentioning from your, maybe a little bit of your perspective, if you will, Autumn. But either way, I don't know if you've heard that cut before, but anything that stood out in particular about what Chuck D had to say in ref, you know, from his purview, if you will.
Yeah, so, that was the first time I heard that. And what stood out most, well, one of the things that stood out was when he said, you know, if you give a fool $1 million, you got a fool with $1 million. So from my understanding or from what I've seen, a lot of these new artists who, you know, make, you know, tracks about money and wealth and all these different things, they don't have the backing to help them manage that money. So they get this signing deal with, you know, however many millions or what have you, and then abandon their own culture, their own neighborhood, their own areas to go live in these more affluent areas just so they can make, you know, material surrounding, you know, based on that area. So they're abandoning all the, you know, the essence of who they are, the essence of who we are, just, you know, for the dollar. So big media, you know, they don't care. Government doesn't care. It's just about putting that music out there so that they can hook, you know, those less educated of us, you know, into that cycle, keep us, you know, stuck there, and, you know, keep the agenda alive. So, yeah, definitely agree with Chuck D. said.
Now, I respect where you're coming from. And so what I would highlight, and I'm going to share some thoughts from DeAsia, as I mentioned, from, again, the hip-hop school past and present. So what I would highlight is that I feel like everything Chuck D. is saying is accurate. Again, even though I said I would be, in a sense, the antithesis of you, but I would highlight that even him pointing out these things, which, again, I would say accurately, I would offer that from a perspective that I don't think we always understand marketplace dynamics, meaning when he, in like kind of what you pointed out, give a fool $1 million in the beginning, and then at the end he goes, these companies finance this stuff. Those are, both of those things are absolutely accurate. I would offer that as you said, they go back to their nice places and, you know, enjoy their money. I would offer that it's the reality that because they're celebrities, because they're stars, and sometimes they do, in a sense, come across a lot of money. And we all understand that, you know, based on some of their background, there may not be as financially literate. That's a word we love to use, as we would like to see, if you will. Same thing can be sometimes said about some of the athletes that make a lot of money or whatever, and their own TV, and we see, and we're able to, especially the athletes, we're able to see their salaries. And so what happens is, by way of them being celebrities, and often in hip-hop in particular, being flashy with the money and things of that nature, so we're very aware of it. But we never think of it as simple as, if you have an employer currently, your employer doesn't care what you do with your money at all right now. But it looks like a bigger thing because they're on TV and in our faces with the money showing it. And at the end of the day, if you're a fan of that artist, for the most part, you want that artist to be successful and remain successful. You know, but that's, we know that's not just quite often the story within the music industry, especially how those contracts are set up. It's always not to their advantage, even when it looks like they're getting a, you know, a lot of money, a lot of that's owed to the labels and all that type of stuff. You know, the industry jerk, if you will. So it is much, is very much a reality. But again, if you put into perspective what I just said, right now, for the most part, if you have a job or ever had a job, your employer doesn't care what you do with your money. Whether you are thrifty, whether you invest it, or whether you blow it all, they have you come. If for example, if you're in an hourly position, you come for a set amount of time, and y'all agree to exchange value for, you know, the amount that you came on for, and you could go gambling away, or again become rich enough to leave the job and start your own business. Either way, your employer does not care. And so, again, I get, especially with these being younger artists, and you hope to have people in their life to guide them, but we have this perspective that these, even as Chuck D said it, these executives go back home, and he said there's no development. I do agree and would like to see music development, artist development come back, having tried to get into the industry some years ago. And even life skills, these are type of things that that would be appropriate, especially considering the circumstances. However, it's not an obligation. So I'm just kind of really beating on that point to give context to how we see these labels, who are really, I think you the one thing that we talked about, Autumn, prior to the show, was how, in a sense, the artist is just a product. And that is a reality. And so we, in my opinion, overplay what that influence and responsibility is. While I would like to see it, it is not a requirement for that record exec who's looking at all of the artists, no matter what genre, possibly looking at them all as product. Not saying every executive does that, but I'm just pointing out that they don't care what genre. They just want to see bottom line profit whenever possible. Your thoughts about me just adding that context to how we see even what a Chuck D, or even what Chuck D said, where he was berating those executives for not providing this development, which again, I do agree with, but it's not necessarily them controlling us, if you will. Your thoughts, Queen?
I like to offer the point that, you know, when we compare it to your typical 9-to-5 and how, you know, the employers give little concern about what we do with that money. There is investment, like, and I can only speak from my standpoint, being in tech, there is investment in the person, into the product itself, because the influence, you know, in tech may not be as valuable, you know, to the, you know, as far as public facing to tech as it would be in the music industry. And so when it's when you're talking about investment, tech invest in your skill development so that you can perform better at work and service their clients, you know, because it is a reflection of that company. So there, that care and concern is there in that, to that extent. To the same regard, I don't believe that, you know, the music industry respects that that level of influence that those artists or those products have. And it's more or less, you know, as is, and the less educated for, in, you know, in those executive minds, the better, because it's feeding into an infection for society. So we're, you know, conditioned to believe that we need this out, this this presence of ignorance and just free spirit, if you will, you know, through our music artists. And the less educated or the less protected or regarded that an artist is, the more attractive it is to some of us in society. And it's not even just us as Black people. You have a whole other segment of race, white people, Asians, that are highly, you know, engaged in hip hop. So that, you know, engagement or participation from those other backgrounds is really valuable to those execs. So the less they pour into those artists, the more they get back from society. So yeah, it is upon them to show interest, and it would serve them well, I believe, if they did, but money speaks better, you know, it speaks loud. So, you know, I believe like their stance is why not? I mean, why should we invest in developing this person when keeping them low makes us rich?
It's definitely a thought. I give a little bit of my own background. Spent some years here in Atlanta trying to break into the industry from a business standpoint. And some of you have heard that story highlighted. One of my best friends is an actual hip-hop artist, now hip-hop producer, but years ago we actually tried to get into the industry. And so I did it from all kind of ways, whether it was marketing, street marketing. I managed a record store, if you will, just trying to understand retail, again, just trying to stay around the industry while trying to break him in. And in a sense, we were unsuccessful to break him as an artist. And the cool thing is we've now highlighted his story. Again, now as a full-time producer a lot of years later. But at that time, just being able to kind of see the inner workings at retail, it was kind of like some executives chose to do what you're talking about, if you will, Autumn, and some didn't. And in some situations, again, imagine that, again, they're not just typically over one genre, if you will. Now, obviously, hip-hop, in a sense, took the U.S., if you will, by storm, and then the world by storm to the extent where they thought it was only going to be a fad, if you will, and it became the number one music in the entire country, if you will. And so that really changed things, where it spent a lot of years underground being cultivated. And when we think of the word hip-hop, for the most part, I would offer that in our culture, we often will try to think of the positive aspects of hip-hop. And for those of us who are older, we were raised with some levels of balance, because there was a time where hip-hop covered all subject matter. But at the point that it, in a sense, became number one in the world, it was only, if you will, on the eve of gangster rap, if you will, that terminology, that particular genre within hip-hop kind of, in a sense, pushed it to the forefront. And it, whereas gangster rap used to be underground rap, it became mainstream. And so when we ask this question, hip-hop, self-destruction, or government control, I think it is fair to say, while within the culture, people will argue hip-hop is not gangster rap. And again, I'm not saying it is, but the reality is, now that gangster rap has become mainstream, and we word it this way because it's mainstream. And so I'm highlighting that because I wanted to set up this comment from De'Asia Robinson, which I highlighted prior to the break, what she had posted inside of that group, so that we can have some dialogue about it. And for those who used to remember De'Asia on the show, she could definitely be colorful in her language. So just be very aware. Again, I wish she was here representing herself, but I'm going to read it exactly like she posted it. And I just want to hear your thoughts again, transitioning into when we say hip-hop, self-destruction, or government control, we're talking about mainstream rap, if you will. And she says, the funny thing about y'all in this gangster rap argument is that we know that white people buy more rap music than black people. So this agenda y'all talking about is really dumb as fuck. If the execs are so smart to come up with this conspiracy to ruin the black community, then I'm sure they were smart enough to know who the top consumers were. With y'all logic, they would have been destroying their own communities. Y'all just like being victims. Some of you colors do not know how to exist outside of victimhood. Being weak and inferior has become y'all identity. Y'all whole existence is being orchestrated by the man, and I really hate that for y'all. So you can see why this kicked off a whole week of comments, because in a sense, she knows what she's doing. She's kind of, if you will, smart like a Charleston White, if you're familiar with him, where she'll kind of say things to kind of provoke, and it created an entire dialogue. But just in hearing that for the first time, what stood out to you in from her perspective, that, hey, there's no conspiracy, it's just us being victims as a community or within the hip-hop culture. Your thoughts, Queen?
Oh, that was a lot. I agree that if, you know, white people were the most influenced by gangster rap, hip-hop, that it would be a contradiction to, you know, the abusers, so to the record execs. And the question then would be, why would they do that? I think it's bigger than just that segment of people. I think that even then, you know, white people not only look at gangster rap and hip-hop, but they look at the world around them, you know, in real time. So seeing us on the news, cutting up, seeing us on social media, fighting one another, seeing us in, you know, outside of their neighborhoods, taking that, the words from hip hop and or from gangster rap and playing out in real life. That's also equally as powerful. So it does touch us first, and we act it out, whereas they may hear it and, you know, I don't know what the word is for it, but it may influence a certain, you know, type of behavior within them, but we take it on full body and act it out. And I think that in movies, in sports, like, you know, Ja Morant, you know, other aspects of our lives and to a point to the, in their lives as well, we see gangster rap come, you know, to life. And so it's not just influencing white people into the detriment of the executives, but it's bigger than that, and it stretches a lot further. So, you know, it is a, you know, contradiction if the only target was white people, but they, it's trickled down to them, you know, after it has already been, you know, infected or become viral in our own communities. So.
No, that's a very good point. This brother by the name of Tommy Bottoms has been on the show before. He had this amazing play called Educated Gangster 101. He talks about it within that play where, yeah, in a sense, I had the exact verbiage. It just slipped my mind just now. But he made some reference point to the idea of in a sense, yes, they're the biggest consumers or whatever, but the influence within our community is completely different than how that mm-hmm. music influences other communities. We can definitely talk about that. I see you 912. We're going to go to a break, and we'll come out of the break and get your thoughts out of the break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mr. Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Truth seekers, please understand, Mental Dialogue is much more than just a talk show. Each and every Saturday, we communicate with you for two reasons, to dialogue and connect. On the dialogue side, we cater to you intellectual outcasts who feel you have no place for honest discourse on race, sex, culture, and African-American business. On the connect side, we've created a community where you can connect with experts specifically in finance, whether personal or business, and mental health, whether it's trauma or to optimize performance, along with all the other skill sets from other MD community members. Our mission was to create a virtual nationwide neighborhood where African Americans learn to trade ideas, goods, and services through social media, meetup, and this podcast. To become a neighbor of the Mental Dialogue Community Club, please visit us at mentaldialogue.com. We are better with you than we are without you. We can be neighbors even though we don't live next to each other. Hashtag raise the culture.
And then drugs came. I mean, when drugs came, it was like a gold rush. It was literally like a gold rush. Now, in the 80s, nobody understood the implications. But the 90s, they wreaked havoc. I lost every man that was important to me, including my father, to the infestation of drugs or the war against them. So, yeah, in the world outside my community, Ronald Reagan was a hero. But in my backyard, he was a villain. I mean, how could Ronald Reagan possibly be a hero to us? How can Scarface possibly not? And so, like I said, in the 90s, you know, hip-hop painted this response. You know, there was this big response to all of the stuff that we were seeing in our environment, the murder, the mayhem, the prison, the death, the destruction. And rappers, you know, were speaking a language that we could relate to. I grew up, you know, feeling like I was being raised by Lil Wayne, by Tupac, by, you know, Jay-Z. And in order to understand who I was as a man, I had to construct my own warped sense of masculinity because hip-hop was the language of a generation of men without fathers. So I'm finding my role models in drug dealers and gang members, piecing together what masculinity looks like. I mean, truthfully, in order to wear the badge of authentic masculinity, you had to be associated in some kind of way with this wayward lifestyle. You certainly needed it to get a record deal. And so what was happening was hip-hop was now being stigmatized as the equivalent of criminal. And guess what we did, unfortunately? We embraced that stigma. And why would we do that? Well, it's a classic psychological strategy. Michelle Alexander writes in her book, The New Jim Crow, that embracing your stigma is a political act, an act of defiance in a society that seeks to demean a group of people based on an unalterable trait. We found ourselves in a nation that saw us as criminals, so we embraced it. Besides, it was good marketing. I mean, in the 80s, hip-hop's target audience was black, male, and urban. By the 90s and 2000s, it had spread out to the suburbs, and the largest purchasers of hip-hop were white suburban males. So when the music was indigenous to its own community, it was positive, socially aware, and anti-drug. When it broadened out and diversified to the suburbs, it embraced criminality, sold it for profit. Socially, consciousness and positivity was out. Criminality and gangsterism was in.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Autumn Williams. This morning's discussion question, hip-hop, self-destruction or government control, as you hear artist Lecrae, hip-hop gospel artist Lecrae, giving his thoughts on what we were just talking about. We got a caller, area code 912, last 3544. We're going to bring them live. If you're out there online, we'll open up the phone lines after this caller as well. All right, give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion. Thanks for calling in.
Peace, family. This is Von, a.k.a. The Love Alchemist, calling from Savannah, Georgia.
Hey, what's going on, King? Thanks for getting in with us this morning. What's your, give us your 3 cents. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, man. So I'm listening to the conversation about why would white people do that to themselves. And I think we make a mistake sometimes thinking that white people are monoliths. And they're no more monolith than we are. So in that regard, you have different cultures within or different subcultures within their culture, and many of them refer – I work with a guy right now who comes from money, and he refers to a segment of white society as white trash, right? And so he would never mingle with those people, who he refers to as those people. And if they – there are those among them who don't mind exploiting those who see the people that they see as not them or different from them. And even within black culture, if you look at the Huxtables, that TV show, I forget, you know what I'm talking about, Cliff and Claire. Yeah. They represented the upper crust of black culture. And so his children would not be the children that you see. Maybe they might listen to gangster rap, but they certainly wouldn't emulate it. You know, it's fictional, of course. I mean, TV, of course. But you get the point that there are – it just so happens that socially, black folk, the masses of black folk are socially weaker. And so because of that, more of us, a higher percentage of us, succumb to such dangerous messages. And I'll end there.
Nah, make some good points. Alderman, any thoughts to what Von had to bring to the table? He's still on the line, too, just so you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And like, and I've been a victim, or not a victim, but I've thought this way as well, as though white people are monoliths. But, you know, in that segment of that community, I think that gangster rap and hip hop is more prevalent to the quote unquote white trash, you know, side of things. So when the sister was talking about, you know, why would the execs want to, you know, infect their own people, I think that what's missing is that there is that segment of people who is more, there's the outcast of that community, and that, you know, that's where the influence goes. That's where the intention for the infection goes, and that's where it is fed back out into our community. It's kind of like this ping pong of negativity that's bounced between the two. So, yeah, I totally agree with what the brother said.
So hear me give a – here's a perspective in how I feel like the question was being asked at the age I had said, and I'm going to share a thought from Supreme Ra as well. But I'll just highlight that, in a sense, I don't know if the exact words that she was being rhetorical, but I think she was, in a sense, in asking that question, because – in my opinion, and to her point, that's not what the music actually does. Like, that's kind of what she's suggesting. And again, y'all could definitely disagree with me on this, but the reason she's asking that question, it's not so much that she's asking, saying, hey, she's kind of saying, if this agenda was such, then why would this be done? Whereas her bigger point is that agenda doesn't exist, so they could care less about that their community and quote unquote how they'll be affected by it. But not only do they care less, but they're not worried about the effect, is more of her point. And so she's saying, if that was the concern, why would they give it to consumers? And it ain't got, and I will say this, not just that whites are a monolith, because at the end of the day, there's plenty of execs themselves in all kind of industries, and I've heard them say this, they all listen to a Jay-Z song before they got to go make a big presentation in the executive offices. We know hip-hop spans the entire, you know, if you will, I'll say it's the right word, but it spans beyond, quote-unquote, right white trash. I think Von's making a good point when you realize that the elite have segregated our country by that manner, meaning, you know, separated people say, hey, we look at white trash this particular way, but if you don't subscribe to this agenda, then you just kind of start understanding it as simply a product. and that's what I think she's offering. But I'll let you get a response. Look, I might have another caller out there, but I'll at least let you respond before I let you go. Thank you, King, for calling in. Well, you're still alive, brother. I want to let you respond, and I'll let Autumn respond as well. But because you know, I get you because you called in, I want to let you respond first. Go ahead, King.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. I kind of missed it. I had to walk away for a minute. If you could you summarize, or if you don't have
okay.
to move on so
quickly? Okay, yeah, real quick, all I would say that in DeAsia asking that question, when she says, why would they do that, you know, in a sense, since whites are the number one consumers, I'm saying her bigger point is she doesn't feel like there is an agenda that the music has, you know, to a degree, has that type of influence. They're just... it's just a product and nothing more or nothing less. So it's not that she actually thinks it's done to harm whites. She's saying that agenda that we claim that exists of it being government control, she's saying that's not there. She's kind of being rhetorical in the question, if that makes sense. That's what I feel like she's doing with that question. Your thoughts?
Got it. Yeah, you know, who can say for sure what a quote-unquote agenda is unless, I mean, even if it even exists. So, I mean, we can theorize all day long, but the end result is the impact that it's actually having. So I don't know for certain that there's an agenda to destroy us or whatever it is. It might simply be exploitative. We don't know. But we do know who controls it, and we do know the impact, the consistent impact that it's having. And we also know that even when somebody like Lauryn Hill comes along with positive messages that absolutely do sell, and they sell brilliantly, for whatever reason, those types of messages aren't consistently promoted. So from that, maybe you can draw and say, yeah, maybe there does seem a consistent agenda to continuously focus on and pump destructive messaging toward us. But that's all I got. I mean, nobody, none of us is in that boardroom, so we don't know.
Hey, fair enough thought, King. Thank you so much for your 3 cents this morning.
Appreciate you having me, man.
No, absolutely. Autumn, anything though that you heard, you know, would like to respond to myself or Vaughn? I'm sorry. Yep, go ahead, Queen.
Oh, okay, there we go. I was on mute. All right. So I would
no
say
problem.
it's just a simple matter of supply and demand. Like the King was saying, those more positive messages are seemingly smothered, you know, and set aside, or even don't even see the day of light or the light of day. You know, compared to the more negative messages. But also the other side of that thing is when we're calling for it as consumers, or when we're hungry for it, or when the demand is there, those execs or whoever's behind the gun have to meet that demand and put the supply out there, you know, whether the quality of music or the intention behind it is initially good. But when you have consumers calling for a certain type of content or material, then it behooves them to meet that demand in order to, you know, for the sake of a god, a profit. So it's a two-sided coin, and I think that on both sides they're equally responsible, so it doesn't alleviate the execs from that responsibility or obligation to serve the greater good, but at the same time, money talks, so that's what they're going with.
Yeah, I would lean heavily on that. I would lean heavily on the latter of what you're saying. And again, I respect you saying, hey, it's a 50-50 or it's two sides of a coin. I actually lean towards that it's simply that, and my brother Vaughn says, hey, you know, exploitation to a degree. I don't even like using that word just because the marketplace plays out in literally what sells, that's what I want to push. And I definitely remember, again, the short time that I was in the industry where basically there's always these comments about artists coming in saying, hey, I wanted to rap about this. And the executive was saying, no, what about rapping about this or change this lyric or whatever, which, you know, in a sense to the more destructive stuff. And what I found once I got in retail and I happened to be with this store that had a lot of influence because they was connected to a lot of other stores, and they literally were just trying to rinse and repeat what was already selling, to the extent that, hey, if this is selling, we want more of it because we want to make a profit. That's not me necessarily letting them off the hook. It's the reality to, hey, I want to keep my job. I want to present good numbers for the quarters based on the artists that I've signed and that I've pushed. And so, yes, the executive may say switch it, whereas from the agenda perspective, we're saying they're switching it because they want to harm the community, where what they're really doing is that lyric sounds good, but it doesn't sound like what's selling. They're just scared to take the chance. That's what I found in the time that I was in retail. They were very, very afraid to take chances, especially as it became more of a numbers game. We're up against the break, Von. I'll get you right back in out of the break, brother. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. This is actually a cut definitely related to what we're talking about right now, so it'll fit right into what we're talking about, and we'll get Von coming out of the break as well.
You're talking about censorship. I don't believe that. I believe in free art. Make whatever you want. I believe you should make music about anti-Semitism. I believe you should make music about killing dogs. I believe in this country you should make music about bashing homosexuals and driving them behind trucks. I believe you should make music about stringing people up on trees. I believe you should make music about killing Whitey. I believe you should make all that music. But I also believe that in the mainstream marketplace, people should hesitate associating their name with certain content. You know, there's certain stuff you can't buy at the store. Certain stuff you can't get on iTunes because their brand doesn't want it. But if you want to hear black people celebrating killing black people, they got thousands and thousands and thousands of those things to sell you. I don't think it's about censorship. I think it's about American cultural hypocrisy. Because here's the truth. These black entertainers, they can't sing just about anything. There's some stuff that'll get them fired. And they get dropped, and they get fired, and they get slapped on the wrist, and they get disciplined all the time. Why? Because sometimes they step over the bounds. A very famous case is what happened with Rick Ross. Rick Ross is the Mammy Two Shoes, one of the many Mammy Two Shoes of our day. He's a black entertainer and a world carved out for him and a role carved out for him by white entertainment companies. And one day he talked about, in the middle of a song that celebrated dealing drugs and killing blacks, he made a reference to date rape. And when he made that reference to date rape, that set social media on fire. That got 100,000 petitions in 24 hours. Hey, buddy, date rape is no joke. That had white people standing outside of Reebok in New York saying, you better take this seriously. We're tired of a rape culture in America. One line in one song moved the masses. And you know what Reebok did? Did they stand by him and say, hey, we believe in freedom of speech. We believe in freedom of expression. It's just a song. Calm down. No, they fired his tail on the spot. The president came out and said, this goes against our high standards. He's gone against the values of our brand. Shame on Rick Ross. We're disappointed. He doesn't know how serious date rape is. And when I saw that, I thought, wow, how convenient. Isn't that amazing? But here's what really happened. It's not their brand. It's not their values. Rick Ross went off script. He was hired to get black customers, and they think that black customers go with black bait. And in America, black bait is the hyper-criminalized, hyper-sexualized portrayal of black people. And as long as he had sung about that, the stuff that got him hired, he'd still have a job at Reebok. But when he touched other sensitivities that affect us, he lost his job. See, the truth is, it's not they that need to change. It's we that need to change. We created the lies. We created them for our profit. We own the companies. We own the record labels. We own the advertisers, and we keep putting it out. And it's this that's got to change. I thought about it. You know what? I wonder if White Mike could get anybody's attention on this. So I stood outside of a Walmart, and I said, hey, I don't think killing cops and killing blacks is very cool. And you know what? It only took 7 weeks of Mike standing out there, and they wrote a letter and said, yeah, we don't think it's cool either. We're going to pull our name off of that. The largest retailer in the world had never considered that maybe their commercial shouldn't be right before or after a song about young black men being gunned down. And I realized this, that black murder is normal, but it should not be. And I realized the importance at the coffee table, at every headline, every pastor's gathering, every family gathering to say, you know what, these black lives matter. It's not just another black kid. These are human beings. I'm doing my best in every way, shape, and form. Talks like this everywhere I can go to say, you know what, I was born in a world where black murder was normal. My kids were born into a world where black murder is normal, but I don't want to die in a world where black murder is normal. Am I 5 years or 10 years away? I don't know, but I'm screaming as high as I can. Let's feel this.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host, Autumn Williams. This morning's discussion question, hip-hop, self-destruction, or government control, area code 609. If you're trying to get in, you will have to press 1. For anybody that wants to join the discussion, the number to get in is 646-787-1691. You have to press 1 to let us know you want to speak. I got Brother Von wanting to get back in. Before he gets back in, I want to highlight and say this. I'm just going to say this to you real quickly, Autumn. As much as I'm saying, hey, here's the executives just trying to copycat, they were scared to take chances on different types of music. I think, you know, in the small time that I was in the industry, historically, labels in general took more chances than they're willing to do now, because I got in as the, in a sense, the CDs were going out and online was coming, and so things were scaling down and the industry was changing completely, so they were willing to take even less chances. So as much as I'm highlighting what I think the music executives themselves, it's not even necessarily a defense. I just think it was normal human interaction for them to, as you said, make the profit, make the bottom line. However, I want to highlight that in me saying that, I agree with damn near everything White Mike just said in that cut. And I want to make the distinction, and as he highlights, black murder has been normalized for centuries. And I'm highlighting that to say that, yeah, since it's so normalized, when we make the music, there's no second thought to putting it out because it sells. I'm not making it okay. I'm highlighting that the messaging has been around for so long that when hip-hop comes along and plays into it, the music exec themselves may be trying to make the money, but everybody understands, as White Mike pointed out, that this is something that sells and is an issue within the entire American culture, and I can take issue with that while separating and not giving credit to the music industry execs being able to control shit, if that makes sense. Do you understand the nuance that I'm trying to lay out there? That I'm going to go back to Vaughn, if you will, Autumn.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There is a somewhat clear distinction between the two, but I think at the end of it, you know, the end result is consumerism and highlighting how that violence is what sells, regardless of what the intention is or what, who has, you know, the touch of the button behind closed doors. That, you know, that violence is what is pushing revenue. And so that, you know, no matter how big the retailers or the marketing strategy or whoever is, ultimately they have to fall, you know, to the demand of the people. So
yep, fair enough. Yeah, let me go to Brother Vaughn and see what he wants to say. Get back in here. All right, Brother Vaughn, what you got for us? Thanks for getting back in, King.
You know, I find it interesting when I don't know if you guys have ever been exposed to a song that you initially didn't like, but they played it on the radio so much that you ended up liking it.
Oh, yeah, okay. All the time. I call it radio. They radio you.
Yeah, and I think that there's a science to music that most of us just don't understand, right? And so it almost doesn't even matter what they play. If they play it long enough and enough times, you're going to vibe to it. You're going to eventually like the what they're playing. And so they can really put in and market and make money off of whatever message they want to push, whether it's a positive one, whether it's a negative one, constructive, destructive. They can market anything, and if they play it, we'll buy it. So I'm saying all that to say, hip-hop started out a certain way, and it was growing at a rapid rate. And again, I make that reference to Lauryn Hill, and there are others who had, you know, pretty positive things. And so for the fact that they're willing to put on the grand stage the most destructive parts of us, I can't help but to think that that's not accidental. Again, I have to acknowledge that that's a theory, so I'm saying that all that to say.
No, I understand. No, I understand.
We have to be mindful that in us not wanting to claim victimhood, that we also don't let them off the hook by saying, well, no, we know it's not that. Because neither of us knows. Like, I don't know any more than the next person knows whether it is a conspiracy theory or whether it's not, whether it's just them trying to make money or whether they do have an agenda. We don't know. All we see is what makes sense, and then also what makes money. Am I making sense?
No, you're making sense. I love the thought process. Again, at the end of the day, we're just dialoguing, and I'm loving the fact that we're doing the nuance. You're making a lot of sense. While I, you know, and you again, you and I go back and forth on a lot of things. While I think we can figure it out, I absolutely respect your perspective, and I'm glad you're bringing it to the table. Because again, it's not about who's right per se. It's about this open dialogue about this subject matter, and I think nuance helps us all. And you're making, or even in where I disagree with you, you're making points in which I do agree with as well. So ultimately, you're making sense to me. Any thoughts, real quick, Autumn, to what Vaughn's saying? Because I love what he's bringing to the table, but I do think we can figure out whether it's just for the money or if somebody's actually pushing the needle, quote unquote, behind closed doors. And I would only offer that because I feel like within the music industry itself, at this point, we've got enough people high enough, in my opinion, to kind of know what goes on behind closed doors. And sometimes I think we, I'll use this word, miscontextualize what happens behind closed doors. Be like, for example, the example I gave, just say this real quick, the example of them telling an artist to change their lyrics. Like, I know that it actually happened, and I get that that context says, oh, see, that's the influence, and all I'm offering, not letting the executive off the hook. I'm just, as I learned retail, I realized this is just a dude scared to take a chance. He's not, he scared to take a chance on this new style of music or this type of lyricism, if you will sell because he don't have a track record for it. That's why sometimes artists have to get fitted with the right label who understands them, whereas that same label, that same artist who might have to change his lyric at this label, had it went to that label, that lyric would say, no, we welcome, that label would welcome what he's doing, whereas really just a scared exec saying, I don't know if that's going to sell or not. And again, just putting out that perspective that context can get lost because there are definitely artists who, as I've said, been told, yeah, change that lyric. But there are other artists, for example, Ice Cube said never once in his career has he been asked to change a lyric. And if you know the early Ice Cube, he would say any damn thing. Just kind of throwing it out. Autumn, any thoughts on what I'm saying there?
Yeah, so no, in agreement with Vaughn, it's, you know, being careful not to let the executives off the hook. Of course, supply and demand is there, but who is creating that demand and then who ultimately has control over the supply? So, you know, controlling these artists, censorship, controlling what they say, how they say it, when they say it, and in the times that we're catering this music to, I think that's all to the control of the exec. So you have, you know, artists, music artists, their creators, have their own, you know, emotion, their own lived experience, and they bring that to their music. They're very passionate about that. But when it comes to that dollar and, you know, who's pushing the product out there, there is a certain level of, if not a higher level of censorship that they have to bow to in order to make that money. To me, it all comes down to money. And whether we like it or not, like Vaughn was saying, when you hear a song on the radio, you may not vibe with it at first, but we're conditioned to, not so much conditioned, but we have a way of forming our lives or our thought process around repeated content. So we can justify lyrics or content or material based on how many times we hear it. It almost becomes like muscle memory in our daily lives. And subconsciously, you know, we may not even be aware of it just listening to the radio or just listening to, you know, peers who are influenced by that content. So it ultimately plays out for the execs because they know that if we repeat the same content over and over again, we'll ultimately win over the critics of society.
Now, so those are some good points. I'm going to highlight some of this nuance again in my time, you know, again, not that I'm an expert or whatever, but in my time of trying to get into the industry and trying to break an artist and go down to these actual radio stations and learn how the radio game works and things of that nature. Yeah, there's absolutely money put behind, you know, you hearing a song a bunch of times. That absolutely happens. Here's a reality, despite the science that, again, I agree that there is a science to it. Vaughn's made a point there. But within that science, here's what flops. When they spent a whole bunch of money and they were wrong about it being a hit record, and even though they paid to have it played too many times, you're going to hear a cut from Chuck D talking about payola. There's still plenty of songs that flop, and the reality is the labels make their money on just a small percentage of artists. So I'm just highlighting the other side of if it was as simple as, and again, I'm not saying y'all were simplifying it, it's just giving the other side of that context that the music industry is a very different industry than most industries, in which you literally succeed off of a few successes, and all the money is made off of a few successes, while a lot of money is wasted. A lot of radio money is spent to, in a sense, get records played per se, and they still fail. So you have to know that it's not as simple as whatever message we want, we can put out there. That demand plays a huge role. We're at the top of the hour, 609, last year, 891. We will get to you out of the break. Well, I'm going to keep you on unless you let me know you have to go. I will keep you on as well out of this break. We'll be right back. We're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Babe, where did you get that hat and t-shirt? I like that.
Oh, I got this at moneymotivation.com. It's fresh, right?
Yes, and I love the message on it, too. You are the hustle, huh?
That's what the shirt says. I am the hustle. They embody the entrepreneurial spirit, and what I like the most, it's more than a brand. It's a lifestyle for those who want to put in the work and expect to have the finer things in life. I also follow them on Instagram. Check this post out.
If you believe money is the root of all evil, you're using it wrong?
Or how about this one? Excuses made $0 an hour.
I like those. What's their IG?
At moneymotivation.co.
But do they have any ladies' gear?
Yes, you're going to love the clothing line they got for the ladies. Matter of fact, pull up their website, moneymotivation.com, and I'm going to get you a few things so we can both look like money.
Everywhere I go, go, and everywhere I be, I don't even talk, talk, they still know it's me. Cause I look like money, smell like money, talk like money, even walk like money.
Really need, y'all really need to have this in the middle of a school system. Yo, I just spoke at Bed-Stuy fifth grade classroom. They bananas. The number one question, and the reason that a lot of artists, they're kind of scared, because they don't even know how to answer young kids. So young kids are really quick. They're quick to ask them about contradiction. And if an older cat can't answer, he's like, yo, I can't even deal with them. You know, really, I mean, they twisted like that. I mean, fifth grade classroom, I said, who do you like? They say, of course they're going to name all the artists they see in here. What do you feel? What do you like from them? Well, I like how they dress or whatnot. What do you get out of them? Nothing. Unanimously, they said nothing. All right, cool. Because I believe that in music, you can either help the people, hurt the people, or be neutral. It's cool to be neutral and make people shake that whatever. It's cool to do that. I mean, you go down to the Caribbean, they make you shake your ass. Yeah. To balance that out, maybe that artist can't do that. Somebody else got to get equal time. Talib got to get equal time without a company having to spend $3 million and giving it to BET and the radio station. We got motherfucking Crayola going on, y'all. Last point before I step out and get some water. I'm telling y'all what's going down. It's antitrust, and I'm telling Hillary right here, antitrust and collusion. Jermaine can't start his independent company by himself. He got to hook up with one of the white boys. Simple as that. It's like it's antitrust, meaning the startup entrepreneur cannot start up a record company, cannot get in the radio game, and damn sure can't get in TV. So you got to get one of the boys. I'm saying, okay, this is America. You get with somebody. Does that mean that you smash out the beginning of business? That's why these kids are talking about, son, I can't get put on because I can't build my shit. They in cities like St. Louis, they might start a record company, can't get played on the St. Louis station. Why? Because all the corporations are all in collusion with each other. It's a goddamn shame. Nobody is dealing with the fabric of black America or even the fabric of some of these white kids. Tired of having people come up to me like Time and Newsweek. But what do you think about white kids and Columbine and stuff like that? Been going on in the black community for the last 20 years. So it floats to the top because this is cultural exchange. Culture is supposed to be exchange. Human beings are supposed to share culture. That's what it's about. But when the companies narrowcast us to be one-dimensional, what do you think white kids going to do? They're going to want to pick up and want to take it from us, and they're getting just this much, and no wonder they're going to fucking act buck. Remember this as I leave. Tupac sold 5 million records when he was living. 22 million FTs dead. Now, cats ain't saying they trying to really die, but, you know, really, if they could get close to a line, because when it comes down to us, bad news is the only news.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Autumn Williams. This morning's discussion question, hip-hop, self-destruction or government control, as you hear Chuck D once again giving his thoughts on what happens within the industry. We got a caller that wants to get on the line as well. The number that you to get in is 646-787-1691. You do have to press 1 to let us know you want to speak. We'll go ahead and jump to the caller before we get into Chuck D's thoughts. All right, last 3891, you're on the air. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning.
Good morning, Montoya. This is Marilyn.
How you doing, Queen?
I'm doing well. You know, actually, this is another both and situation. It's a part of the genocide for our black kids. It's also a part of the money. Everything is about the money, but black kids are money. Big money. Big money in the prison pipeline. Big money in merchandising, big money in drugs and guns and all of that. So it's all geared. There's a plan and a purpose for what's being done. It's not a matter of supply and demand. You're supplying what's being demanded. You're supplying the supply where it can only be demanded. There are no choices. You know, well, you're in that age group. Mm-hmm. This is the music that you listen to. So and it is grossly affecting the community.
Let me share this with you. This is a comment from, again, Supreme Ra, who was able to make it on this morning. He says, the industry pushed gangster rap more because it was selling more records. People also gravitated to better quality sounding music. The production was more crispy. The stories were more enjoyable. Yeah, the conscious shit was dope, but it was all about money. No grand scheme to destroy our minds. So I'm sharing this thought with you, Marilyn, because I will tell you, I agree wholeheartedly with what Supreme Ra just delivered. And the reason I say wholeheartedly, and I actually disagree with the both and, is because when it comes to the music industry itself, it makes money off of music listenership. And when you say, as you say, black kids are money, well, that's the exact same thing in every genre, whether that be rock, whether that be country, the music execs are doing the exact same thing based on the demand. They cannot make the demand as we continue to try to push, and I completely disagree with giving them that much power when in reality they're just doing a product and service. That's not saying it's okay, but I don't like trying to say they're able to create a demand when that's not true. We are the demand. I agree with Supreme Ra. Your thoughts to that, Queen?
Like I said, it's all engineered. It's engineered. They're doing it for a purpose. Do you know, for every child in school, it is, I think they said something like $10,000. Or no, like 10 people get paid for every child in school. For every child or youth in prison, 37 people get paid. Okay, this is a part of the engineering. This is a part of the genocide for black children, for black people. You have different things that are being engineered and geared towards certain age groups in the black community, just like they have the system of welfare for the adult black community. They have prison for black men and the deaths of black men. And now the children, the youth, they're using the music and the music industry. They're glamorizing it. They're putting the videos out there. They're putting the sneakers and the clothing and the jewelry out there. They're making it glamorized, and that music is humped up, it's pumped up. Sometimes you don't have to listen to the lyrics. It's the music that draws. It's the music that sensualizes, you know, that tickles the senses. So, no, it is engineered, because you're saying if you're playing something and you don't like it and they play it enough you'll like it, then change the genre and make it just as likable. I came up in the 60s and the 70s. I mean, music was a whole different thing. and we liked it, but it was keeping us, I won't say passive, but we weren't doing enough, or they couldn't accuse us enough to imprison us, because we were all true love and everybody loved anybody, the white kids and the black kids, everybody was everything. But they had to change that because there's no money in that. There's no benefit to that for them. You know, this is a capitalist society. All they think about is the money, and they do have the control. And the one thing they do is with music is they control.
So I'm going to say this to
there
you.
A lot of,
I want to say this to you, if you will, man. So when I'm a hip-hop head, I came up. I used to seek the underground music because initially when rap would be on mainstream, it was far from what we hear it to be now, the kind of music that we hear now in mainstream. I'm sorry, is that you, Marilyn, or moving in the back? I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. So I'm going to mute you for a second because this is background. So when there was a time where, in a sense, rap was almost pop initially before, you know, before the underground, if you will, became to the mainstream. But as a culture, we applauded, and DeAsia pointed this out this week on her, and where she was giving her rants, if you will, on her page, on that group page that I'm telling y'all about, pointed out that, yeah, we were the ones that applauded Luke Skywalker for being able to get freedom of speech and allow rap to be so commercially. Now, the results of it was the actual parental advisory label was kind of a compromise or whatever, but prior to that, it was kind of being put out there, and they was like, you know what, we're going to ban these type of lyrics. And so that's where I get weary of talking, you know, about these levels of control, when the very people that had to give in based on the legality, and that we ourselves within the culture fought to be able to have freedom of speech and make these lyrics against the quote unquote very people that we say are controlling us. And so we miss that this is simply supply and demand. And I, like, the part of the reason I wanted to do this dialogue was opening us up to see it for what it actually is. And so, Marilyn, I'm going to let you get a response to that, and I want to hear Autumn's response to that as well. All right, I'm going to give you a quick response.
Wow.
I'm going to get Autumn back in here as well. But I wanted to point out that as a hip-hop head, we fought for this. We fought to be able to make these lyrics when the same people were saying control it. No, we don't want to put this out. And then we fought for it, like, the rights to be able to do it. So how was that they in control, in your opinion?
They didn't want to put it in at that time because it was changing the genre. And they knew that what was coming ahead. They knew where it would lead to, just where it is leading to now. So now that there are different talking heads in those positions.
You see what I'm saying? I don't think we realize we give them credit both ways. So at the time that they were saying this should be censored, we can't do it. And then, you know, the artists themselves, not the entire black community, again, I'm not doing that to us, but the artists themselves says, no, we should have a right to do it. And I'm telling you, as a hip-hop head, I was glad Luke won that case. Again, the compromise was the parental advisory, but I was, as a hip-hop head, that's the music, because what happens in the music industry, the youth drive the industry. That's all genres. The youth drive the demand. The labels cannot drive the demand like you think they can, because I've watched plenty of executives get axed trying to figure the music industry out, and they often do not make it. We just look at the overall machine, but they make it on very few successes and a lot of failures in the industry. That's just supply and demand. I don't like giving them credit that they don't deserve. Autumn, I'm going to give you a thought on what I just said before we go to break. You can make it quick. Go ahead, Queen.
So I don't have many thoughts on piggybacking off of that. One thing that stuck out to me, what the Queen said, is that black children are the demand, so that there's not an issue of supply and demand. But I don't quite agree with that, being that white, you know, white, quote unquote, white trash are the number one consumers for hip hop. I think it's more leaning towards those impoverished, you know, mindsets, regardless of the race. You have Asians who are, I hate to say it like that, but that community who's creating dances, TikTok virals, and getting money off of that, it's, you know, stemming off of hip hop or, you know, gangster rap or that music. And then you have those with a deficit mindset who are spending their last to buy into the infection. And I don't think it's explicit or exclusive to just black boys or black children. So yes, while this is another tactic that I believe is designed or put in place to keep those stuck in that, you know, state of mind, it's just not limited to us. So I would like to offer that opportunity to think that it's not just us that's, you know, being brought into it, but just, you know, the state of mind is what the industry is targeting, and that's where the money is being, that's where money is coming from, and ultimately money is the power behind this initiative or this intent.
That sounds good. We're up against a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers. Why you ask?
Man, you got to try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wines. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping deal or something. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Try the sweet red first.
Okay, that's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's kind of sweet like I like it. You know what I'm talking about?
For sure. That's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Zinfandel. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay. Now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on too.
Oh, yeah? Okay, you said what? Shipandsharewines.com, is that it?
Yep.
Bad.
I'm trying to shake the drum, and I started out at the rappers because that's what tricked me. We're starting to learn more and more about Tupac. We're starting to learn more and more about Suge Knight. Suge Knight was a football good kid, come from a good home. He wasn't tough. He wasn't, man, do you know if we would have known that? Man, if we would have known O'Shea, Ice Cube wasn't a real gangster, that he was intelligent and O'Shea liked to write movies, man, we would have had something else to strive to be. If we would have knew Aramis was so intelligent and liked astrology, we need something else, man. So I'm saying, okay, man, Tupac played himself. He played himself. I played myself, man. I was supposed to have been a lawyer. I waited to go to law school too late. Non-traditional student. It's harder to do it that much. So you see what I'm saying? We got played. So let's quit playing, y'all. That's why you hear me say, man, I was playing gangster. Man, I was playing bad. I was playing pimping. I was playing. And I'm starting to find out we all was playing. None of us wanted to be bad, nasty, mean, heartless killers. Somewhere down the line, we was taught wrong. We was tricked. We was abused. We had to grow up and take on this mindset in order not to be prey. And then it became a part of who we grew up to be. But we fought not to be it, but we didn't know how to change. So I'm starting to see all this now. So that's why I'm so adamant about, man, fuck them rap-ass niggas. Man, fuck that shit, homie. Give us a work. So that's why I wake up and say, hey, man, I'm taking my daughter to school. Say, man, I've drive. So I'm, man, I got a, man, hey, man, I'm sitting at the table eating breakfast with my wife, baby. Look, so I'm letting the people, so I'm saying, okay, man, this is what they need to see. Man, look at, man, so this is a family, man. He seemed crazy, but, man, the guy's married. He's in his children's life. He's at the volleyball games. He's at the kids' football game. He's in the community doing this. He says some crazy thing. That's the character. So, but I step out of the character and say, I don't cuss like that in front of my wife and kids. I don't talk like that when they at the table. So this is what we need from a culture standpoint.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Autumn Williams. This morning's discussion question, hip-hop, self-destruction, or government control, as we hear again the infamous Charleston White giving his perspective on, as he says, Tupac played himself gangster. I always remember one time hearing of a response to, I think it was Anita Baker or maybe Patti LaBelle, I think it was Anita Baker that asked him in a sense because when she met him, she found him to be extremely intelligent. And, you know, I don't know if it was necessarily to her surprise or whatever, but she ended up meeting and talking to him, and she ended up asking him, you know, in a sense, with you being this way, you know, why do you, in a sense, come off, if you will, as a bad boy or whatever? And Tupac's response, to some degree, not necessarily, I'm not quoting him, but his response was, to a degree, would they pay attention to me if I wasn't a bad boy? And where I'm distinguishing and agreeing with Supreme Ra talking about, you know, in a sense, gangster rap, if you will, was just simply selling more. When he says, when Pac says, will they pay me attention if in a sense I wasn't a bad boy? Because we now know, you know, in a sense he was poor, but he didn't necessarily come up into the streets. A lot of people don't know this, but he was never arrested until he was an artist. So he didn't necessarily, again, poor, knew a lot of people in the streets, if you will, but he didn't come up doing the things in a sense that he rapped about. And when she said, when he says to, I think again, Anita Baker, would they pay attention if I wasn't a bad boy? I am offering that today we confuse it and think he's, in a sense, we might confuse it in this perspective that it's the execs. And he's literally talking about us, we the consumers, and what we want and what we demand. When I tried to go down to the radio stations and things of that nature, try to break my artists, I remember one of the top program directors in the country, if you will, they would have these events for people trying to get into the industry or whatever. And I never forgot it. I could always forget his name. He literally said to us, and this is again, even, and let me say, to give this context, I used to believe that there was this controlled agenda even to this point in my life. And here's some perspective that made me realize this is simply a supply and demand thing. And again, when I say simply a supply and demand thing, it's not saying there's no responsibility, but I am highlighting how we should stop giving power to they as if they're pushing anything. When I, for example, when I heard this comment from that program director, which was, he was saying, hey, believe it or not, and Atlanta being one of the few cities, is like the 11th largest radio region, if you will, market, I should say. And he's like, believe it or not, 7th and 8th graders run the radio. And that was like super unique to hearing that. I'm trying to break into the industry in my late 20s, trying to break my artists into the industry. So we were in our 20s, if you will. And Atlanta being one of the few markets that does support local radio. You might remember the cut earlier where Chuck D was saying, hey, a new artist in St. Louis might can't get their radio played on the radio locally. That is pretty much the case, especially in major cities. Atlanta being different from that standpoint, and I think it definitely helped Atlanta grow into what is known as now as one of the leading cities in music, because they did support their local artists in ways that other cities would not. But at the point that I'm making here is, he was like, 7th and 8th graders are at the age where they're old enough to, in a sense, use their phones. This was prior to cell phones being crazy as they are, you know, everybody has them now. But his whole point was, they were at the age where their parents allowed them to use the phone, and they call the radio and demand new music, whereas high schoolers are too cool to do that. High schoolers are too cool and too busy themselves to be calling the radio. And so quite often they figured out who the young hot artists were based on this large demand from those 7th and 8th grade callers. I never forgot that. And then when I got in retail and started seeing how that phenomenon worked, We literally would have those executives calling our store saying, what's new in the streets in Atlanta? Because Atlanta was taking over the industry when I was in retail. And literally, we would figure it out from the kids. And literally, sometimes my owner could literally say a name that the kids were bumping that the execs did not know about, and they might at least get a meeting with the label. And it made me start realizing consumers have way more power than we think, even though as a culture, no, we're not happy about Black Death being okay. But it's no, and we definitely relate it to, you know, we know is a reason why on the news they play, or I shouldn't say they show bad news, just like Chuck D said. So we definitely see how it's interrelated, but we think they're driving the genre when they're really playing into what's already there. And that's playing into what's already there is not the control that we like to think they have. And I agree with the Asia that we have to get out of this mindset of realizing, oh, there's nothing we can do. Because, again, we might think we may believe we're not saying that, but we are if we disregard that at one point the same people we're talking about were trying not for the music to come out. But when the public and when the kids demanded that it come out, that's what won over. If we don't realize, and that in hip hop we do, we realize in a sense we won that battle at the Supreme Court for those of us who consider ourselves hip hop heads. So if we now realize that, now we look foolish to turn around and say, well, those same people now are controlling us. You see what I'm fighting for here? Autumn, again, in detail, I know you have a lot more time with me, but I wanted to get all that out and get your response to what I just said before you get off the show.
Oh, Lord. Okay, so I'm going to be honest with you. That was a lot for me to process.
Yeah, I know. I did say a lot. But I knew you had to go, so I tried to give you – I wanted to throw a lot at you just to get some response, and I'm hoping these callers get in here and hold me down for these last 30 minutes. But go ahead, Queen. Any part you can pick up on, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I don't have any opportunity right now. I would rather deter it to a caller and then pick up and
I understand, McQueen. I know you got to go, so go ahead and thank you for the time that you've, held me down, and I'll continue this conversation. I see Marilyn out there. I'll maybe give her to let her jump in here and see if she has any response to what I have to say. But thank you for the time that you did make for me this morning. Again, I know it was last-minute notice. I appreciate you, Queen, and we'll catch you in the future. One of our Queens of Intellect members. Thank you very much, Queen.
You're welcome. Peace out.
All right, man. I see you out there. So I'm about to bring you back live. I know you had a little background noise. Again, hope you're okay with coming live, but I just wanted to get maybe some response to what I'm saying. Like, we're not realizing we're giving it to them both ways if we had to, in a sense, fight to get the same stuff that we're now saying is detrimental to us. If we fought to get it, and like a Supreme Ross says, at the end of the day, the consumers, we were picking this music over the quote-unquote conscious music, when the conscious music was what we demanded. I'm from that generation that demanded the more conscious music. When it was in demand, the same execs paid and pushed that too. And then when we changed the demand, I'm part of the same generation that changed the demand. The executives got behind that too. It is, we're all agreeing that it's all about the dollar. Where we're disagreeing is that they have the power to change it, when I'm sitting here witnessing it firsthand that we as consumers changed it, and I remember the transition. I'm fortunate enough to get balance. The new generation grew up with no balance. They didn't grow up with any conscious music. The demand had already changed, but it was our own damn demand. I think we have to be aware of that. It's not taking blame, but it's more about not giving credit to some plan that they put in place. And we're not realizing this is just simply marketplace things playing out. I'm going to give you a response, Amanda, if you want to jump in and give me a thought. I don't know if you – I'm not trying to make you, but I just see you on here with me. Go ahead, Queen.
When I think of Marvin Gaye, when I think of Curtis Mayfield and some others during that time when the transition first took place, they were coming out talking about what was really, really going on. Marvin Gaye said, okay, what's going on? And I think they took that, and then they took that genre, and then they exploited it to the point where, well, they didn't exploit it. Another genre came through where they wanted to tell their truth. They wanted to tell what was going on in Compton. They wanted to tell what was going on in New York. They wanted to tell what was really going on in these streets. Okay. But when they found out that they could use that, then they started dictating what you could and could not say. And that's when everything started going down a funnel to drag in our youth and to get the prison system involved and the lack of education and the lack of dads in the home and overworked mothers. And they just were able to take over that whole demographic because nobody else was overseeing it. Nobody else was protecting it. They owned it. They own it now. And they own it to their down to our downfall, but to their benefit. And I'm sticking to that because
that's
I have seen the transition in our people.
I appreciate the thoughts.
You know,
I'm actually up against a break. I'm glad. Again, we welcome that strong opinion. No problem, Queen. We're up against a break. Thank you for even giving me your 3 cents. I did bring you on last notice, so I definitely appreciate that support. All right, we're going to go to this break. I'll let you sit on and maybe get on here with me some more. If you will, Queen, I'm going to put you on mute now and go to a quick break, and we'll be back and continue this morning's conversation. Hip-hop, self-destruction, or government control? If you want to get in on this show this morning, 646-787-1691, and press 1 to let us know you want to speak. We'll be right back. Well, all I ask is that you think.
LNG Technology Services, we are your industry leader in aircraft and heavy equipment repair services. In commercial business for over 15 years, LNG technicians have over 150 years of equipment-specific knowledge and are known industry-wide for returning worn-out, broken, and overused ground support equipment back to the user in working better than new conditions. For a service job done right at a value unparalleled in the industry, contact LNG Technology Services at 478-781-4860. Again, for a service job done right, that number is 478-781-4860. LNG Technologies is a Mental Dialogue Gold member and proud sponsor of the Mental Dialogue community.
Hi, y'all, so peep this. Janelle Monae understands hip-hop has its own issues to reckon with in regards to change. On Friday, July 3rd, the singer-actress wrote on Twitter, "I really only ever want to hear women rapping. The amount of misogyny from most of men in rap and music is infuriating. We need to abolish that shit too. Y'all can't wait to call women every bitch, ho, discuss violent acts against women, etc. for clout in rap, rock, and throughout music history." She continued, "Misogyny has never been okay, yet has become normalized. Women didn't create misogyny. Y'all did. So you do the work to abolish it." She added in a follow-up tweet, "The only gaslighting I accept is the gas we lighting to burn down the misogyny." Monet's sentiments were shared by actor India Moore, who wanted to go one step further. Abolish culturalized sexism, misogyny, queerphobia, anti-blackness, and toxic counterfeit masculinity from all art, the post-star wrote. But especially the forms of it that re-perpetrate these cycles in black culture via black music. Let's keep our artists and challenge them to transform inside out. The calls for an end to misogyny in hip-hop are well documented from the likes of Dee Barnes to artists such as Queen Latifah, Rhapsody, and more. In 2018, MERS broke it down for Hip-Hop DX's The Breakdown series in the history of the use of the word bitch in hip-hop, showcasing how prevalent misogyny is in rap lyrics. According to the Genius Rap Stats, the word is the second most used word in hip-hop, only behind n***. The reckoning in regards to misogyny and more has been everywhere in 2020, from the Russell Simmons documentary On the Record to titans of the industry wanting to tear down old norms. In her graduation speech to the class of 2020, Beyoncé told the class, "The entertainment business is still very sexist. It's still very male-dominated, and as a woman, I did not see enough female role models given the opportunity to what I knew I had to do, to run my label and management company, to direct my films and produce my..."
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, hip-hop, self-destruction, or government control? Please jump in here this morning with us, 646-787-1691, as you hear a cut where Janelle Monae, a few years back, called for basically a boycott, I would say, of hip-hop, if you will, with it being so misogynistic. And here's something that I've always said, because it's not that I am defending, in a sense, the messaging, even though I'm highlighting the reality of how the demand is actually more the driver than we want to give credit for, based on partly my inner workings in the industry from the time that I was in, plus, you know, some of the other arguments that, again, DeAsia and Supreme Ra making from the hip hop school, past and present, which, again, I agree with them. But highlighting, I would like to highlight, when it comes to the actual messaging, here's something I've always said. The day it became commercially viable to refer to our women as bitches is the day that the black community lost. I'm going to say it one more time. This is my own thoughts, and I put it out on the Mental Dialogue Facebook page in the past. The day it became commercially viable to refer to our women as a bitch is the day the black community lost as a whole. So now, getting into, again, self-destruction of government control, because, again, I push back on government control. I push back on they having the powers that be, when I understand, from my perspective, that it's literally, does it sell? And if it sells in America, people are going to try to sell it. And for me, that is not necessarily to trying to control the community. But when we get back to the messaging itself, some of the things that, you know, Charleston White talked about with Tupac, that he played himself gangster. So it speaks to, I think somebody else called in, highlighted, you know, the Ja Morant, what he's going through, trying to, in a sense, live up to this false image that he's no longer associated with it. I'm very aware of what the messaging does. I like DeAsia, like a Supreme Ra, do not lay that at the feet of a quote-unquote they, when that's, in our opinion, not the reality. However, getting to the messaging itself, yes. There's never been a time where humans, in the way that we communicate with each other, we always try to get better in how we communicate, but there's never been a time where certain vernacular, when you're upset with someone, regardless of race, and regardless of what language, that all languages have, you know, negative words towards each other. And so at any given time, certain parts of different societies or different cultures may use certain vernacular more than others based on, you know, their upbringing, if you will. So that's always been around. You know, there's never been a time where, again, particularly in the black community, you know, our negative words currently in 2023, as I was just pointing out by that cut, or, you know, niggas the most used word in hip hop, and bitches the second most word used word in hip hop. So those words have been with us for a long time. However, the commercial part is what I pointed out in my own quote. So I'm being very distinctive about, while, you know, that's not how I like to refer to my brothers and sisters personally, I'm not naive to the fact that people will refer to themselves and others in this manner. Again, this is a very normal human trait that may happen, and some people may use it as an everyday word. I used to use nigga as an everyday word when I was younger. So I get that. However, yeah, I am not happy about the commercial exploitation of the word being used in that way, because here's the destructive aspect, and it's getting into the psychology of normalizing and referring, for those who may do this, to every woman, quote unquote, as a bitch. That's very obvious, but the deeper psychology of it is adding to, in a sense, a devaluing of ourselves. So I'm very aware of, in a sense, the narrative, the American narrative, of us valuing ourselves less. I'm very aware. I'm very aware that this music plays into a narrative that's already in place. So I in trying to distinguish the nuance of what I'm saying, I am highlighting that yes, it can have destructive messaging. However, I'm also willing to own specifically where this falls into a product, a supply, and demand situation that looks exploitative. In reality, it's often an executive who cares nothing about our community. And so when an artist brings a song that doesn't affect his or her community, but somebody says this will actually sell, that executive is going to sign that paperwork. I absolutely get that that same executive, if someone brings a song that affects or who he thinks he is based on his own perspective, based on his culture, who might say, oh, no, you're not going to put that message out about me or my culture. And I always challenge our community to, if what I just said makes sense, if what I just said makes sense, then I challenge our community to never expect another culture to give a damn about what you say about yourselves, or in this case, about ourselves. And so I don't attach a conspiracy and a plan to add to that when I get that this executive don't give a damn if it sells. And like Chuck D says, go to their, you know, big ass house in the Hamptons, having made a bunch of money off of a rap artist on that label and a country label, the top two selling genres. That artist don't give a damn what the country artist say or the rap artist says if they selling like hell on their label. Don't give a damn as long as it sells. And I don't have no expectation that they would give a damn, because we do understand we live in a country that, as White Mike says, has normalized black death. I am not saying that shit is okay. But I am challenging the nuance of understanding versus saying, hey, look at what they did. It's no, come to understand the nuance of how these things work and what can we do to defend against it. That's the question that I'm asking. I'm going to share a piece from my book, Reeducation of the Negro. Hopefully most of y'all have, you know, reached out and went to Amazon.com and looked up Reeducation of the Negro, Necessary Conversations, Race, Sex, and Culture. I've been overwhelmed by the support that I've gotten in person. And the online sales are increasing. But again, go to Amazon.com, and hopefully you'll like some of what you're about to hear now and decide to pick up the book. But I always clarify for those who are unaware of the book that these are short commentaries, hoping that you will have these dialogues like we have here on Saturdays every with your family, as you see the benefit of having more culturally relevant and important conversations on race, sex, and culture. This piece is called Black Socrates Speaks Deeper Than Rap. Every time I see young parents riding around with their 2 to 5-year-old children listening to trap music, I wish they knew the irreparable damage it can cause. Before the age of 7, children should not be exposed to any explicit lyrics. Psychological studies show that children exposed to this type of music before the age of 7 have trouble distinguishing between the songs and reality throughout their lives due to the part of their brain still forming until this age. This is why children can quickly assimilate several languages before the age of 6, but after that, the child must be taught a new language. Another reason this is specific to hip-hop is due to the fact that the music is created from a drum machine. In other genres, musicians typically play live instruments and make slight mistakes detectable only to the human ear. Therefore, they are incapable of playing a perfect beat as the drum machine can in a hip-hop song. This perfect beat subconsciously creates a trance-like state for the listener, young or old. Hence, the drum machine is why hip-hop is loved worldwide. This trance-like state is also why people that cannot speak English can easily recite rap lyrics when our rap stars travel the globe. This further shows how powerful and damaging this trance can be for young minds. Think about this. How would a young man raised on these explicit lyrics ever hope to have a meaningful relationship with a woman in their lifetime if they only listen to music that declare money over bitches? What self-worth should young girls expect to have after listening to these same messages for most of their lives? Oddly enough, Rick Ross said it best when he said, "This is much deeper than rap. Just my 3 cents. All I ask is that you think." And these commentaries are equipped with discussion questions. I'm going to share this question, go to break, and give my personal response to this question coming out of the break. The discussion question, again, for this commentary is, gangster rap was at its height in 2019, but the black murder rate was at an all-time low. Why do we overstate music's role in crime and overlook the economics? We're going to go to break, and we'll come right back and give my response to that. And you can actually call in at 646-787-1691 and give your comments as well. We'll be right back, but all I ask is that you think.
Are you intimidated by money? Well, this is a question most people never think to ask themselves. But when forced to think about it, many people realize they have unrecognized fears that truly affect how they deal with money. If you want to learn more about money and the fears that keep you from prosperity, join us for Making Money Matter Mondays, where money meets mental health with personal finance coach Ashley Thomas and psychotherapist Dr. Katrina Pitts. Every second Monday of the month, find out if you're intimidated by money and what to do about it. To receive a link to this free Zoom event, please DM the Making Money Matter or the Mental Dialogue Instagram pages or contact 404-604-9477.
A lose-lose situation that the fans want to put the rappers in.
Absolutely.
If they don't do it, we're going to quit listening to you. If you do it, if you do it and go to jail, we're going to quit listening to you.
Exactly.
But if you make a song from jail, we'll listen to you.
Mm.
But you got to be telling us about the murder you committed to get in jail. That's all we want to hear about. Tell them about the murder you did. Fuck all that other shit. We are begging for public executions. We watching them. We watching public executions again. We watched 10 black people die. We watched the rappers get killed on cameras. We watching public executions, homies. And we love it like the Romans used to. Kill him! And that motherfucker down there fighting a lion. God damn it, they got a buffer to get him. And they cheering for the animals. Because this man stole some meat. And he got a gladiators. That's what we doing, homie. We like that white man that used to get a thrill out of watching a nigga hang. And when he get through burning, they go up there and cut his penis off. Give me one of them earls. They did it to Bonnie and Clyde.
Mm.
We have that thirst now. We cheer for a YouTuber to get killed live on YouTube. We want to see it. We want to see it. And we go share it when we see it. With no remorse.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. Well, all I ask is that you think. This morning's discussion question: hip-hop, self-destruction, or government control? So you hear another cut from Charleston White. I just read my piece out of Reeducation of the Negro. I want to relate it to that cut that you just heard. The question asked right before the break was, gangster rap was at its height in 2019, but the black murder rate was at an all-time low. Why do we overstate music's role in crime and overlook the economics? Let me relate it to what you just heard from Charleston White before I really start answering the question. And so, unfortunately, Charleston White was referring to an artist who lost his life named King Von, a Chicago drill music artist. Drill music, if you're not familiar with, is pretty much music talking about killing your ops or your enemy or those from the other gang and things of that nature. So it's actually another subgenre within quote-unquote gangster rap, if you will, if you're not familiar with it, if you will. But my uncle, who's a longtime music DJ back in South Carolina, where I'm from, pretty famous in the area, we recently talked about this very subject, and him having been a longtime DJ, known for playing the old school, and he kind of says, you know, he said this to me, he's like, man, he says, he wanted to get my perspective on the effect of the music, just from the standpoint of, he's like, I don't want to necessarily down hip-hop completely, because I'm proud of how some of these artists were able to kind of take control and really make good business decisions and become businesses of themselves just through the music, in a way that even some of our past artists, you know, didn't seem to be capable of other genres. And so he likes to highlight, I don't know, how he loves to see, in a sense, you know, a lot of the youth, in a sense, bossing up, and a lot of times that projects into other industries too. So he's very aware of that effect that not just within the music industry itself, but hip hop has pushed a lot of our generation to be entrepreneur and you know, if you will. So he likes to acknowledge that or whatever, but he's like, man, I can't get with that, you know, that other style and other kind of music. And so when I asked the question, why do we overstate music's role in crime and overlook the economics? This is what I explained to him. And I says, the mistake that we make when we start talking about the self-destructive music, if you will, is we try as a society and as elders, or I'm not an elder per se, maybe, but even when we look in a sense down on the young people and the music that they make, I say it's actually a lazy response to actually place the actions on the music. In the piece that I read prior to the break, I broke down the actual effect, which is the psychological damage to not be able to distinguish reality from non-reality and how that can play out in someone's life as a older person. And I would say it gives us a Ja Morant. Harmless kid, acting gangster, and about to blow his bag. Hate the fact that he's considering doing that. Kid's not dangerous, and we all know that. But not being able to distinguish reality from fakeness, he might have been exposed to some lyrics way too early in his lifetime. And I always get this pushback on that piece. I'm just talking about what the actual studies show. I don't like to see young people exposed to those lyrics, you know, even later in age than that. But I'm just talking about what I can scientifically find out. And this study was conducted by a black psychologist. I don't remember his name. I found it years ago or whatever. But this psychologist actually invented a music instrument. I always hate it. I don't remember his name. And did this particular study to find out the effect of destructive lyrics on young minds. So I'm just kind of walking through and massaging through my point here. And so as I walk you through that, what I want to relate, and here's the mistake that we make as a society and is somewhat lazy, is a King Von, who was a Chicago drill rapper who unfortunately did commit murders on the streets of Chicago, and we talk about how the youth now are silly enough, and we see this case with, you know, Young Thug and things of this nature, where they're actually putting their actual crimes in the lyrics. The one thing about, as I mentioned, Ice Cube, which is one of my favorite artists, whatever, he was a pretty much I guess we call it a fake gangster, if you will. He was just rapping about what his friends did. He wasn't a gangster himself. And that was pretty much most of the gangster rappers in our era, if you will. And I do agree that it is foolish for a rapper to go rap about some crime he actually did. So that kind of goes without saying. However, here's a mistake we make as a society when we look down on the youth in the music that they're making. As silly as that is, the reality is, a King Von was already in an environment that led to him being part of a gang before any label would pick him up as an artist. So when I say, why do we overstate music's roles in crime and overlook the economics, is because we actually want to make the music as a causal and effect aspect which lets us off the hook when we talk this way, not realizing the King Vons of the world, if they grow up in an environment where there's youth employment and they don't have to survive in the streets, because that's where the start of getting into the streets comes from for the small percentage of our community that does that. It usually, in a lot of cases, starts out of necessity for a lot of those. And yeah, where you have the good kid who wants to go and be gangster like a John Morant and maybe get a little too involved, yeah, that happens. I'm not denying that. Me as a smart kid, I love the genre. I was a little too curious with the streets, if you will. Never got involved, never joined the game, nor would I. So my southern southern values that were input in me by my mother and my grandparents, I grew up in an environment where that did not make sense. Some kids don't grow up in that environment. And the reality is we try to say the music they're making has a role in that, which lets us off the hook for the environment that we gave them. And unfortunately, some of them are literally just telling their stories, and to the point that we all hate those who are going as far as putting the actual crimes in their actual music. If you're understanding what I'm saying, King Von was in that environment before he ever made a song. He did those actions before he ever made a song. That has nothing to do with the music. And the reason I asked the question in that piece, gangster rap was at its height. I'm talking about selling the highest it has ever had. It was the number one genre in 2019. I'm talking about gangster rap specifically. However, the murder rate, unbeknownst to most people, I look at the numbers all the time, was the lowest they had been since the 70s. But we think the music plays a role and deny the actual thing that matters, the economics. That's on us as a culture to be aware of. The only thing that lowers crime is jobs. Always, and this is where a lot of people listening will always agree when I push back on the, and I'll still say this, the dumb ass comment of black on black crime. Like, I used to own that and believe that was something based on the murder numbers in themselves, right? Like there's no denying that, you know, half of the murders, if you will, in the country are committed by black people or whatever. And so we love to equate that to black-on-black murder. But then nobody does the full context, and you realize that's less than 1% of us that will ever be involved in a murder. I'm talking about as an entire culture. That's not a black-on-black crime murder problem. That's when you go see where high murder rates exist, you see economic issues, regardless of race, even in this country. And so when you realize it's the economics, you can, one, stop attaching race to it. And then, again, when we scapegoat the music, again, I'm not saying these lyrics. I've pointed out several times on this show where I have problem with the psychology of what the music does and the devalue that it will become normalized within the culture. There are psychological issues. I am not changing that part of the story. However, to lay the feet of criminality at black children, at music, is actually a weak response by us as a culture, realizing we can give children an environment in which they won't go down those paths and they still might rap about it. That's actually harmless if we're going to be honest about that part. I'm talking about harmless in the sense that the music doesn't make someone become a criminal. But that's kind of how we look at it and how we talk about it. And again, I'm not a fan of that particular type of genre becoming mainstream. But I do understand the mainstream was simply by the demand. Just like Charleston White said when he said, the fans, and this is a reality for the young current rappers that do drill music. If you don't rap about it, we're not going to listen to you. The fans are driving that. We know they shouldn't put their crimes in their lyrics, but their willingness to, in this social media everything on our live show on social media age is if that's going to get them followers, that ain't no regular record exec asking for that. That's, they got a bunch of followers, and the regular exec say, oh, they got a bunch of followers? Oh, and they make that kind of music? I don't give a shit about that. Sign them. That ain't no plan. That's a product of service that I can make money on. Some of us, most of us choose that are entrepreneurs to sell legal products. Some people choose to sell illegal products. Ultimately, that's about the profit. We ain't controlling nothing. The demand controls that. All I ask is that you think. See y'all next Saturday.